And let's start with our movie reviews. Three up for review tonight. Animals, a Dublin-set buddy movie about the pressures of friendship when one half of the relationship feels the urge to settle down. Gaza, a documentary where Irish filmmakers Gary Keane and Andrew McConnell ask the question, what do people do when they're not under siege? And The Sun is also a star, a romance between two immigrants in the United States of America. Fate brings them together in New York City. Gavin Burke and Roe McDermott have been looking at the movies and they're with me in studio now. And we'll start with Animals, directed by Sophie Hyde, alias Shawcat, and Holiday Granger are the main characters here. Adapted for the screen by Emma Jane Unsworth from her own novel. She was on the programme with us earlier in the week. Was it last night? I think it was last night. Can't remember which night now. Gavin, what exactly is happening between these two young women?
Well, we have Laura and Tyler. They're negotiating Dublin as they reach their 30s. Laura is a writer struggling to finish her first novel. She's been writing it for 10 years and she says she's only 10 pages in. She's constantly distracted by her flatmate Tyler, who's always at the ready with a glass of wine or a shot or a pill of something. But when Laura gets attracted to and engages classical pianist Jim, played by Fraffy,
complications arise.
Yes, he encourages her to move in with him so she can focus on writing.
Yeah, I suppose the big thing here was I spoke with Emma Jane Unsworth about this, several big things about it, but we have this the female buddy movie, which is not something we often get, Ro.
No, and I think whenever it happens, when you have a film like Bridesmaids or when something like Fleabag hits television, then everyone says, oh, this is the moment of female friendship, and you're like, okay, that's two. This is hardly a canon. So I think this film...
Well, I suppose it started back with Thelma and Louise, which everybody said would change everything, and it didn't.
And it didn't, because we had Thelma and Louise. We didn't need anything for another 20 years. But I really like this film. It kind of drops you into this friendship that feels incredibly intimate and lived in. They don't make apologies for how intimate the characters are with each other, the shorthand they have with each other. And it kind of makes you catch up that this has been a decades-long friendship. There's routines established and very distinct roles. These two girls are each other's wing women. They're partiers. They love that. But there's also this sense of this is such an intimate relationship that needs to evolve and needs to grow, particularly as their lives change.
Yeah, toxic nature was what Emma Jane and Unsworth spoke about last night.
Yeah, and it's unintentionally toxic. Mm. It's just that they are comfortable with the roles they've created for each other and with each other. But as their lives change, those roles no longer fit. And I think that's really interesting with Laura. And Holiday Granger captures that idea of being torn between the kind of party singer girl lifestyle she has with Tyler, the settled down lifestyle that Jim is offering her and her sister has. But then there's an alternative that she feels more comfortable with, but she can't quite visualise. And I think that's Laura's struggle, portrayed really beautifully.
It's set in Manchester in the original novel written by Unsworth, and here we have it in Dublin. If I hadn't been told the novel was set in Manchester, I thought, well, this is a Dublin story. It's very Dublin.
It is. You know, she really, Sophie Hyde, the director, really captures the nightlife, but without bringing attention to the landmarks. You know, another director will go, oh, there's the spire. You know, it's Dublin. You know, we always get, you know, something set in Paris, opening shot's going to be the Eiffel Tower. You know, and she's restrained there. You know, she isn't... She's an Australian director.
It's an Australian-Irish co-production.
And like Roe, she's just more interested in the friendship, the intimate friendship that these women enjoy.
All right, let's listen to a clip and hear it. Tyler is the alias Shawcat character. Kind of touch of America about her, and Holiday Granger is quite definitely the Dublin girl. And they're in a bridal shop at this stage looking at potential wedding dresses. But what's attracting them is not the dresses in the shop, but what you get when you're looking at the dresses, as we hear.
So I hear there's this dress shop that does free fizz for brides-to-be. All the bubbles you can knock back.
Sounds like a challenge.
Doesn't it?
Can I help you, ladies?
I need some kind of wedding dress.
Would you like some fizz while you're looking? It's complimentary.
Yes.
I just don't get this virginal bride stuff. It's very problematic.
That and the idea of your father giving you away, as if you were a human baton being passed from one tyrant to the next. It's gross.
That is why my dad is not going to give me away. Yeah. It's going to be a very modern wedding. Stay to me.
the state of this whole shit show. I'm gonna let you in on a little secret, my friend. There is no such thing as a modern wedding. All this froth, it's all prime example of watch the birdie politics. Look at the cupcakes. Look at the cupcakes. Look at the cupcakes.
And that's Alia Shawkat and Holiday Granger there in a scene from Animals. Roe McDermott and Gavin Burke with me in studio this evening speaking about difference of opinion about the accent here now. What do you think, Ro?
It does feel like
I'm talking about Holiday Granger's accent. She's Dublin. Alia Shawkat, I think, is making no efforts to be anything other than American.
She's an American character, which actually becomes quite interesting because Tyler's represented as so independent and kind of almost performative in her independence, but you get a hint as to why that might be, which is an interesting little hint. I think Holiday Granger, she's trying very much to do a Dublin accent. I mean, if it works for you, it's very strong. I am never going to complain about people's accents because mine is a mess, so off you go. But I think everything about it feels quite lived in. Even I think the portrayal of Dublin, it reminded me of how Dublin old school, as Gavin was saying, doesn't rely on famous landmarks, but it's a very personal experience of Dublin.
Very much those two women.
And to me, this feels like a very female experience of Dublin. Like, even the fashion is amazing. It's very thrift stores. There's Wyvern Lingo t-shirts and Repeal sweatshirts. But also their relationship, I think, captures something that's in the book, is that it's very tactile and sensual. It's all about, you know, touching each other. It's about the physical experience of a hangover.
Yeah, I asked Imogen Unsworth about this. Was there any ambiguity around the nature of that relationship? Was there any sexual side to it? She didn't really answer on that one.
I don't think it's sexual, but I think it's intimate in a way that we're not used to seeing women be on screen. And I think even the female gaze is very important. Laura starts fancying a poet, and this throws her into a bit of a loop about her own relationship. But the gaze is very female. There's a sex scene where the divide between what we're taught sex looks like and actually what's pleasurable for women is incredibly clear and incredibly funny, the way it's presented, those gaps. But I think the gaze of it and the experience of it feels intimately female in a way that we rarely see on screen.
So you're not prepared to pin your colours to the mast on this accent, though. You're saying her accent is awful, Gavin.
I am not. No, I was straight on.
I thought you were saying the opposite.
I have to say, Will Poulter's accent in Glassland is the best Irish accent I've heard, but this is a very close second. And I agree with Ro about the pseudo-sexual nature of the friendship. I think what Unsworth was after is that real deep friendship that you might have with someone when you're younger. It's almost like a love affair, like Superbad or Booksmart or Handsome Devil, and that's what she's after.
And I think something that's interesting is that female friendship is largely acknowledged to be so important to women, but we don't have the same kind of rituals or language around it. So when a friendship breaks down, we don't talk about breakups. If you have a breakup of a romantic relationship, people know to be careful with you. They know there's a mourning period, but we don't have that language for friendship. And I think she's getting to that. It's kind of that gap and that intimacy that is created, but the lack of respect and kind of ritual around it.
Did it work for you, Ro? It sounds as if it did.
I really enjoyed it. I think it was layered. I think I actually enjoyed it more afterwards as I thought about it and as kind of the theme started to percolate. I think there are kind of some dreamy sequences. There are some pieces of dialogue that are a bit forced, but even then, these are kind of poets and people who want to be writers and people who are very performative.
Yeah, so there's a certain pose involved.
So it makes sense for the characters. Or while you're watching, it might feel quite distancing, but actually the reality of it and the truthfulness of that begins to sink in. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So,
and what about you? How did it work? Stars.
Oh, I'm going to give it a 4. I really enjoyed it.
And what are you saying,
Gavin? I'm
going
to give it a 4 as well. I wasn't looking forward to it because the trailer didn't sell it to me at all. But 5 minutes in, I was on board, and I just loved hanging out with them. And that's what the movie wants you to do. You want to hang out with these people.
All right. That's Animals, clearly beloved of both Ro and Gavin this evening. Let's move on to Gaza, a documentary made by two Irish filmmakers, Gary Keane and Andrew McConnell. Filmmakers who are not at all unfamiliar with the Middle East and making films about that particular part of the world, Ro.
Yeah, so these two filmmakers, they actually came together because they wanted to make a film about young men who were surfing in Gaza and kind of representing this kind of very joyful, exploratory, interesting side of Gaza that we don't get to see. Because, of course, the portrait that we get of Gaza is quite one-dimensional in one sense. It's tragedy-stricken. It's about violence. So they wanted to make this other three-dimensional portrait, but then they realised that to do that, to really capture the lives and experiences of people living there, you also have to address the hardship. So they kind of combine these two things. So it's Gary Keane and Andrew McConnell, who's trained as a photographer, and they spent 4 years in Gaza. They shot over the course of 4 years. They were there in 2014. That was an incredibly violent year and saw the deaths of, I think, over 2,200 Palestinians, and then returned to Gaza in 2018 amidst the Great March of Return protests. So the film, it isn't presented chronologically. It's not, there aren't timestamps saying this is 2014, this is 2018. Instead, it's kind of a three-act emotional piece where you're introduced to characters, then you see the hardship, and then you see the real violence.
Yeah, because it starts out, I think one of the opening, they said that idea of the surfing doesn't surprise me, because I think one of the questions they asked from the outset, the two filmmakers, was, you know, what do people do when they're not under siege? Now, I don't know how, when you're not under siege on the Gaza Strip, but when, you know, how does ordinary life go on in an area like this? How do we get much of that before we get stuck into other aspects of things, Gavin?
Well, it's the other aspect of things that is the problem. I think they try and cast the net too wide. There was so much interesting stuff here that I wanted to learn more about, but they didn't have time because they're off to get another facet of the region, and it left me frustrated. I mean, one, I think it was the paramedic, one of the subjects to have, they said, you know, if we didn't have Hamas, the whole Palestinian issue would be resolved. And I thought, well, that's an interesting political take. Let's hear more about that. No, we're on to something else.
But if they said they were going to concentrate on, or if the idea was to concentrate on these personal stories to start out with, were they better off leaving that politics to the one side?
Yeah, but when the politics influence the personal so much to that extent, I mean, they're trapped there because of the politics. You can't remove one
But we do get to meet some characters purely, you know, as people in their own right, not people in a war-torn district or area.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what Gavin's saying is true, but I think it's also an incredibly difficult balance for the directors to strike, because they've already been accused of this film being propaganda by people who would support Israel. So I think it's difficult. So they try to avoid the political conversations, but they introduce us to characters. Like, we have a young Ahmed who is a refugee, and he sleeps along with a few other boys on the beaches because the refugee camps are so crowded. And then we meet young Karma, who is a young kind of middle class Gazan who wants to be a cellist, and she's quite articulate and philosophical about life in Gaza and wants to get out. And we meet Abu Sita, who's a designer who organised Gaza's first ever fashion show and has memories of times where things like the hijab weren't normalised in the region, and how actually fashion and politics and religion have all become slightly more radicalised. And then we have a taxi driver, Ahmed, who takes us on a tour of Gaza, so we get to see kind of the bustling nature of the strip, we get to see life going on, but it's also against this backdrop of like ruined buildings.
Yeah, I remember one. I saw a bit of a trailer today at one point, and it was two young boys playing on the street and having great fun, and then they heard the sound of the rocket coming in, and the absolute fear across their faces and the panic that struck those standing on the street, and realised, oh, that's very close to us, we better take cover.
Yeah, that's almost the documentary in essence. They tend to juxtapose images. You know, you'd have one image would be a soldier with a rocket launcher, and it's cut to, oh, there's a beach vendor selling floaties. So it's that we're living with this, but we're trying to live as well. This constant to and fro goes on constantly.
Let's listen to a clip, and this is, I think this is a bit further into the film when they've moved maybe a bit further away from the human stories into the more political side of things, and it's Abu Amir Elewa. He's a Palestinian activist, and he's speaking about the what it feels like to be under siege and maybe some of the reasons he believes that they are under siege.
When they make the siege, they make the terrorists. When they make the blockade, when they blockade everything, they make the terrorists. Not us. We cannot now go to the university. There is no money. We cannot build the houses. We don't have anything to scare, you know. We in the street, okay? For what we scared? You scared if you're rich, if you have villa, if you have money in the bank. We don't have anything. It's mean we can do anything. We can do anything.
Abu Amir Aliwa there, a Palestinian activist. And obviously there was a kind of a terrorist or some kind of attack going on while that particular piece was being recorded. There was a lot of noise in the background, clearly. Is that the sort of clip that you're talking about? You know, when they make the siege, they make the terrorist. Is that kind of statement that has got the filmmakers into trouble?
I think it is statements like that. I think it's also, they said that they didn't show as much of the violence on this side of the strip. But they hold most of the violence really until the final 15 minutes, because the second act is largely about the obstacles facing people in daily life in terms of unemployment, power cuts, water shortages, the rigid limits on movement in terms of fishermen are only allowed fish 3 miles into the sea, and there's mass inescapable debt. And so all of the violence is really contained in 15 minutes. And of course, they can only shoot where they are shooting. So you see young boys with rocks and kind of homemade slingshots and catapults, you know, homemade catapults.
And they can only, when the violence happens or whenever the rocket launch or the rockets are coming in, they can only, if they happen to be filming at that time, that's what they're filming.
Absolutely. So I think that's where some of the criticism, but it does feel incredibly real. I will say, just in that clip, I think everything that is portrayed is so emotive. I think they get to the heart of not just the violence, but the stagnancy and the sense of really being imprisoned by the circumstances that prevent people from evolving and growing. But I think things like the score become quite overbearing and slightly manipulative. I think there are also some sequences where you see, for example, Karma walking on a beach and she's...
Who's Karma?
Karma's the young cellist who is a really compelling young person to watch. But she'll make incredibly philosophical statements and say, you know... the only thing people ever give us is sympathy, and they see what they want to see and they should look deeper. And that's an incredibly true statement about how the world perceives Gaza, and the sense of this is unsolvable, so we shouldn't try to do anything. But the moment feels slightly manufactured. So I think it's incredibly powerful, and they don't almost need these extra moments to highlight the point. It's incredibly clear.
And were there any Israelis spoken to? Did any Israelis appear in the documentary?
Completely absent. I mean, they're just after ordinary people in the street trying to make a living, which is a winning factor. I just wanted to know more about them. Maybe if they didn't cast the net as wide.
So maybe less subjects, is that what you mean? If you had one or two subjects followed more closely rather than three or four followed at a, what you're saying, is it a slightly more shallow level?
I wouldn't say shallow. I mean, there is a lot going on, and it's never dull. And I think we're talking about... It sounds like we're talking about a real dour documentary, but there is joy and there is humour to be found there as well. Mm. I just wanted to know more about the individual people. The paramedic is very interesting, and the taxi driver, and Karma, and her mother as well. I found her very interesting. I wanted to know more about her because she seemed to be well-to-do. How is that family...
So
better off than someone
else.
Your
interest was peaked, but ultimately not satisfied. Sure. Stars from you, Gavin.
I'll give it 3.5.
3.5. What are you saying, Ro?
I thought it was really excellent. I thought it was 4. I think, as Gavin's saying, it's 93 minutes, and it's very rare that I say a film could be longer, but I could have done an extra 15 minutes and really gotten into the heart of the stories better. But I really thought it was very powerful.
All right, that's film number 2 then this evening, Gaza. Let's move on to The Sun Is Also a Star. An interesting kind of, this is a classic romantic comedy in some ways, yes. Gavin. But there's a little edge to it, given what's happening in the United States of America. In fact, even earlier today, what was happening in the United States of America.
That's right.
With
ICE. It's almost the anti-Make America Great Again romantic comedy. This is about a Jamaican 20-year-old who has 24 hours to sort out her deportation papers, or her and her family are going back to Jamaica. There's a Korean medical student who is desperate to get an interview. They meet in the street. She's nearly knocked down. He pulls her back just at the right moment. Sparks fly, and he says to her, "I can make you fall in love with me scientifically." I thought, okay,
that's very romantic.
Where's this going to go? Nowhere. it's just not very good. I want it to be really good. And I think the script, I think on page, the script by Tracy Oliver, who wrote Little and Girls Trip, which have been out in the last year, the dialogue would be a lot better on the page than it's on the screen. I get the feeling that...
All right, well, let's listen. So you're saying that you think that if you're reading this dialogue, it'll be fine, but when you're seeing it or hearing it, it's not great.
Yes.
Well, let's have a listen and see what we think of that. Natasha is played by Yara Sahidi, Charles Melton then playing the character of Daniel. And they're kind of here describing what they think of each other and what they think about love.
I'm a girl who believes in science and facts. I'm definitely not the kind of girl who meets a cute boy on a crowded New York City street and falls in love with him. Not when my family's 12 hours away from being deported to Jamaica.
I've always been the good son, the good student, living up to my parents' high expectations. But when I see her, I forget about all that. Something about Natasha makes me think that fate has something much more extraordinary in store for the both of us.
That's Charles Melton there, and Yara Sahidi from The Sun is also a star. Fate. The minute you hear fate being mentioned in that kind of way, are we in trouble already?
I think something that I think is quite funny and self-aware about the film, if you ever watch a romance film and you, all their coincidence-laden meet-cutes, if you've ever just felt like, why don't you just emblazon the term deus ex machina on someone's costume, they literally do that. That's how the characters literally meet. Daniel sees her with this jacket and says, deus ex machina, I just scribbled that in my poetry notebook. I must
We're made for
this
each
woman.
Other.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think the characterizations is quite simple. She's kind of cynical and a scientist. He's artistic and romantic and want to be poetic. And they latch onto this idea of a New Yorker questionnaire that is 36 questions to get to know somebody, and then you're meant to fall in love with them. In that sense, it's kind of like a YA Before Sunrise, in that two characters meet, they're different, they spend a lot of time together, they bond over very intimate philosophical conversations. And there are some lovely touches in here. I think Rye Russo-Young,
the director,
she's directed Nobody Walks in Before I Fall, and she is really good at creating these quietly complex, very personal, sensual moments. And I think there's some lovely things here.
But I hear a big butt coming.
They use Yara Shahidi's character. She kind of narrates, and there are these flashbacks that show Daniel's life and his parents' life as Korean immigrants and setting up wig shops, and how the Korean immigrants kind of dominated the wig industry in America when they came over. There's snapshots and photographs of her parents meeting in Jamaica. So you get this real sense of generation and immigration and travel. She's also a scientist, so she's interested in this idea of the multiverse, which creates this beautiful little sequence where it's an alternate future where they end up together, and what would that look like? So those are really interesting. And then the script is so awkward and so hampered. And I mean, I think the actors are both beautiful, but they really struggle with it. I will also say that Charles Melton is 28 and Yara Shahidi is 18, and it looks that way.
Looks odd,
and so his aggressive romancing looks.
I suppose
it's
important to point out that we're talking about a South Korean leading character, and the Jamaican leading character. And you were saying with the majority of the characters in the, there are very few white Americans, as it were.
Not even the majority of the characters. I have to watch it again to really find out. But I was around a midpoint, and I thought not even the people in the background are white. It was just brought to my attention, and then I started to really analyse it going on. I didn't find any. Now I could be wrong, but
I think
this is the good thing about it.
Immigration lawyer at the start, which makes sense.
Yeah, of course they're white American.
Right, you're right. Maybe
does it work?
Right.
And stars from you, Gavin.
It doesn't work. I think it worked on the page. I think those lines, the dialogue they had between them, were supposed to come thick and fast rather than slow and drawn out. But no, the final two.
What are you saying, Ro?
I think it's very pretty. It's potential laden. I think young audiences who enjoyed Nicola Young's book, on which this is based, might get swept up in the romance and the beauty of the two actors. But it is just, unfortunately, a bit of an awkward letdown.
Stars?
I'm going to give it 3. It tries real hard.
It tries 3 for trying. Ro McDermott and Gavin Burke there talking to us about Animals, and The Sun is also on Star, which are in general release. Gaza is at selected cinemas.